Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, chapters 15 and 16, the Quidditch Final, and Professor Trelawney's Prediction. In these chapters, Harry the writer is trying to get the Quidditch Final to serve as the, like, metaphorical symbol of, like, triumphing over all the evil Draco and Snape have done. But guess what? It doesn't.
No, it doesn't work out that way. Poor guy.
And then chapter 16, Professor Trelawney is tripping on acid or crack, or I'm not familiar enough with illicit substances to know what the appropriate metaphor would be.
She definitely has an otherworldly experience during part of this, so this is pretty crazy.
But at a glance, what did you think of these two chapters?
It always surprises me, you know, sometimes how they wrap these up. The Quidditch chapter was, like you said, it was pretty much, I unfortunately kind of glaze over sometimes, but when I read the Quidditch chapters, but the Trelawney's prediction was pretty unintentional. It was funny because of just how she definitely has some, her gift or whatever kind of come through, and then she's like, dismisses it. So, and then Hermione in these couple chapters was very interesting. So,
yep. And then so we start off right where we left off, where Harry and Ron read the tear-soaked letter that Hagrid has sent Hermione.
Yeah. And then here he's very dry with his response, rather than, you know, last time it was a little more hopeful, but obviously he's just trying to, I guess, remove his emotion from the situation. So I feel bad for him. But this kind of helps Ron and Hermione resolve their differences a little bit.
Yeah, and Hermione finally apologizes.
I was going to say, we really, like in our last episode, really built, you know, talked about how she's very proud and she doesn't apologize. And I guess her being in this fragile state, I don't know, maybe that was part of it. Maybe she just had finally let it go. So glad she did. Good for Hermione.
Well, it's just, and it's nice that she did it because, you know, Ron wasn't necessarily like giving up his position. Like all he was saying that, you know, I'll help you with the hippogriff stuff. And then she finally breaks down and addresses it directly. Is like, I'm sorry. And that's all, that's really all Ron needed to hear. And it's just like, you know, he was pretty old. All he needed was to hear the word sorry. That she cared at least a little bit.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That she had some remorse for what had taken place instead of being so, well, you know, that's just the way it is. Yeah. I'm glad that that happened. It was kind of like, and Ron in a way was kind of giving her an apology by saying, oh, we'll help you with this situation. Finally, she does not have to do it alone anymore, which is nice.
Yeah. So the new safety measures since Black's second break-in make it so that, you know, Harry, Ron, and Hermione can't really get to see Hagrid and can only, like, talk to him on the DL during the actual Care of Magical Creatures lesson. Here's what he said. It's all my fault. Got all tongue-tied. They were all sitting there in black robes, and I kept dropping my notes and forgetting all them dates you looked up for me, Hermione. I just know how Hagrid's feels because, again, I did have to go into a courtroom that had my husband's ex-girlfriend present.
Oh, my.
And it's just a really horrible system where they should have, like, had me and my husband and her, like, separate and us talk to the judge at, like, different times. Like, the way it was set up was totally stupid. I don't know why that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, that really, I mean, I think especially in this, in any case where it's a, there's a crime with the victim, that is not okay. So it can re-traumatize the person.
Yeah, and
it, the victim of the crime.
Like, I didn't show any exact visible signs of trauma, but it was the sense of, like, I had all these, like, points I wanted to make to the judge, and, like, I got up there and I just, like, froze.
Understandably so. It's funny that, I don't know, putting in individuals in those different situations, and I was talking to my coworkers, we're going to be meeting in a big group, and I was like, just so you know, I just kind of can't, I function differently in these situations, so don't take it personally. But, you know, this is the situation where there's a lot on the line for Hagrid because he's about to lose his pet and he's trying to keep it together. So his emotions are definitely very deeply involved in this situation. And it sounds like they got the best of him in this moment. But I also don't know if there could have been, like, I feel like Hagrid could have made like a stellar case, and Lucius Malfoy, you know, the kind of the decision was already made.
Yeah. Like, again, it doesn't matter if Hagrid had presented his case impeccably, just Hagrid does not have the social capital to take on, you know, Lucius Malfoy.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And Ron's like, there's still an appeal, but Hagrid understands the power that Malfoy wields, and it's like, it's not going to matter.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, it's not going to matter. And it's just, again, we're kind of like real world things kind of play out in this book. This is one of those situations. And like you said, the experience with the justice system, I was supposed to have jury duty, but I didn't. So I don't know. I haven't been there yet.
And so the class, Care of Magical Creatures class, ends, and Malfoy's like, look at him blubber. Have you ever seen anything quite so pathetic? And Hermione just slaps him in the face.
This has been building and building and building. And I think everybody's probably reading this, just waiting for this to happen. Kind of a surprise that was Hermione, but she has had enough and can't really blame her. I'm not condoning violence, but also it's Malfoy. I don't know.
And again, not to like buy into notions of like benevolent sexism or anything, but I think it's something to be said that when a girl instigates, like a young girl is instigating violence against a boy, where again, we're all conventional wisdom is like she would definitely lose a physical fight.
Sure. Yes.
Because this made me think of, I did get to a point where I didn't slap them, I didn't punch them, I kicked them. So there were these boys in my choir class, and basically there were a lot of kids in my choir class in middle school who were there clearly because they didn't want to do the extra work of a different elective, so they took choir and just didn't pay attention and whatnot. And this, there was a substitute teacher that day, so they really weren't paying attention, and so they're being like so disruptive and, you know, again, like, you know, pushing my buttons. And it got to a point where I turned around and kicked one of them in the shins.
It sounds like it's, little kids can be horrible, and you know,
and it was this big brouhaha of like, you know, them calling my father and like things, and my dad's just like, if Amy is getting to the point where she's kicking people, there's a bigger problem.
Right. There are a lot of kids that act or just, you know, whatever, to be like this no matter what. But then when you push somebody so far, especially somebody who's not going to, that's not their initial reaction, but that's like the final, you know, final straw. Yeah.
And I think everyone within their K-12, like childhood, you know, school experience this in to some degree of the typical lazy teachers or administrators, where do they solve the actual problem kid? No, but when the good kid finally again snaps or retaliates, they punish them.
Right. Because that's
it's easier to discipline those kids instead of get the root of the actual problem child.
Right. And kind of like in this situation, the factors of, I guess, you know, whoever's parents are is probably factored into it. The Weasleys don't have a lot of, you know, they can't come after anybody hard or whatever. But I understand what you're saying there. And then Ron gets in on the action too. So.
Yeah. And Malfoy is just like leaves because, you know, I think at this point, Hermione's also pulled her wand out and Malfoy knows he cannot take on Hermione magically.
Yeah, when the wands were coming out, I was like, oh gosh, what is going on here? But good thing it kind of, he left, which again, that's a kind of like typical coward behavior, right? He's like willing to just run his mouth. And then when it really comes down to it, he doesn't really have a leg to stand on.
And so they go up to charms class where they're, is something moving in the background?
Yes, it is me. I just needed to change my seat, so I'm fine now.
Okay. Yeah, so they go to their charms class where they're doing cheering charms, and Hermione has vanished.
Yes, yeah. And there's a lot of confusion about this, but which we've kind of talked about. I already know kind of what this is leading up to, but they find her asleep, right? She's sleeping on a bunch of books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm trying to think if I have been to that point of stress where I legitimately forgot to go to a class. I think the worst thing I did was I was in Morocco and I was unfamiliar when exactly their daylight savings were. And so so I missed class because I forgot about daylight savings and I felt so bad because I was doing an independent study. So that professor was waiting on me, like there was no one else for him to teach. And so that I felt really bad about that. But again, that was like daylight savings. That wasn't like I was so overwhelmed. I legit like completely brain farted on it.
I mean, I have those situations come up when I do that, and it's just more just probably more in my adult life than when I was younger. But it's simply because it's just like you're trying to manage so many things, and then it's just like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot that thing. And I think you're that much harder on yourself in that instance too, because you're juggling so much. So, but that's also, this is a big like, that is so out of character for Hermione that Ron and Harry are kind of like, what is going on here?
Yeah. But again, my first rereading where I am kind of harsh on Hermione's choice because it's not coming from a purely, oh, I love school and academics. Like that is part of her personality. But she's already admitted to herself that she despises divination, and only now is she finally quitting.
Yeah, that whole
so scene like it's not all much. So again, so it's not purely an innocent, oh, I love school. Like she wants the bragging rights of saying I took all the classes, and I think that's very shallow. But of course, this is what a 13-year-old girl.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it is not a fun thing to, I guess, like take on a lot of things and then realize that you just can't, you don't have the capacity.
It's taking on things you don't even enjoy. Like it's one thing, it's right. Like, oh, like I love all these things. It's so hard to pick which one I have to give up. It's like, no, there's a very definite one you could give up.
Right, right. She does not like this one class, but yet she still attends, like you said, to just kind of have the bravado, and that's not great.
No. And so they're they're starting with crystal balls, and Hermione, again, probably on the tails of, you know, her slapping Draco Malfoy, she's just over absolutely everything at this point and cannot stomach Trelawney's BS anymore. And it gets to the point where Trelawney's like, my dear, let's see, where is it? I am sorry to say that from the moment you have arrived in this class, my dear, it has been apparent that you do not have what the noble art of divination requires. Indeed, I don't remember ever meeting a student whose mind was so hopelessly mundane.
Ouch. That's awful.
That's the closest anyone, well, the exception of Snape, that's the closest anyone has come to calling Hermione dumb.
Yeah, which is... She's not. She did. And so this Trelawney is just such a confusing character to me because it's, you know, I feel like she's kind of disregarded. And that's something that I kind of picked up on. The prejudice toward divination kind of comes through in Harry's retelling of these events as well. I kind of feel like nobody's really even giving it a chance. You know, a couple of the students, I think Lavender Brown and Pavarti and they're supposedly very good at it, but it's just as controversial in the real world. So it was really interesting.
And again, because this is from Harry's perspective, like Harry has already written off Lavender and Pavarti as, you know, hopeless, silly little girls. And so if they're impressed by it, it's the shows that they're weak-minded or that they, that's further kind of indirect proof that divination is a bunch of BS because women like it and therefore it's terrible, like the Twilight Saga.
Like the Twilight Saga, like so many things that are
pink,
trivialized.
And like everything else. That's
about women. So many things. Yep.
Speaking exactly. of pink, I like my husband was like looking. We were in Kroger just to pick something up really quickly, and he was trying to find his. Whoa! What was that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, something heard a poof in your mic.
I don't know. I didn't move.
Okay. No, but my husband was looking, trying to find the type of razor blades he wanted, and I was just looking at the male razor blades and the female razor blades, and I'm just like. It's true. There is a pink tax.
There absolutely is. Yeah, it's I know some people I know use men's razor blades or men's deodorant for that specific reason because they're just like, I'm not going to pay. This is stupid. So
like, unless a product is like super fragrant, like with the flower stuff that I want, then yeah, I would go the masculine stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just certain things that don't need to be gendered, and it's just weird. I don't know. I've stumbled upon like hats, just different things. It's like why or luggage? It's just I don't know. I guess I don't know. It's just strange.
But Hermione has had enough, and she quits.
Finally, maybe she should have started there, but her pride got in the way.
Mm-hmm. And Lavender's like. Ooh, Professor Trelawney, I've just remembered. You saw her leaving, didn't you? Didn't you, Professor? Around Easter, one of our number will leave us forever. You said it ages ago, Professor.
Man, just that's a little bit of kissing up to her professor there.
But what do you make of this? The fact that it's true, that is what Professor Trelawney did say. Now, do you think she genuinely has some semblance of a gift, or is this purely judging by her experience, at least one of these super analytical types are going to leave by the end of the year?
I don't know. I think that's a good question, and I think that's a question for the type of class she teaches in general. I mean, is it a generalized enough prediction that it could be applicable to many things? I mean, if she were to sit there and say Hermione Granger is going to leave in blah, 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 you know, and give very specific details, then that would be one thing. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's mild in both its vagueness and specificity that you really could argue for either one.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of that's the thing that I think frustrates Hermione in the whole class, not just these chapters. But also is just a constant question in this world as it is.
Mm-hmm. And so the Easter holidays come along and Ron has taken over responsibility for researching Buckbeak's appeal. When he wasn't doing his own work, he was poring over enormously thick volumes with names like The Handbook of Hippogriff Psychology, Foul, A Study of Hippogriff Brutality. And it's just, again, one of those rare instances where Ron is really devoting himself to research. And again, Ron's not a dummy.
No, he's definitely not.
He just
not.
Has no motivation to apply himself.
Yeah. No, wants to, he can make it work.
Yeah, when he wants to, he makes it work. But I feel like in his general, like, again, he has a very specific goal in mind to help Hagrid. But just, well, I think we got part of it in his, you know, big monologue when we first meet him on the Hogwarts Express. A part of him feels that even if I, like, excel at something, it won't matter because my brothers have excelled at so many different other things before me that it doesn't matter. I'm not special. Yeah. Even if I did apply myself, so why should I even try applying myself?
Yeah, and that's one approach to life I think people take is, you know, I'm never gonna be this anyway, so why even try? Now, if that's the best approach, but that is definitely an approach that people take.
But what else is going on? So again, Wood is bombarding Harry with, you know, you can only catch the snitch if we're 60 points above Slytherin. Otherwise, you know, we'll lose the cup even if we win the match. And Harry's like, I get it, Wood.
Yeah, obviously, Oliver Wood. And this is his last year at Hogwarts, right? He really, like, this really means a lot to him, I think.
It does. His last year. Yeah, and I'm not spoiling anything, but Oliver does go on to, you know, play Quidditch professionally. So this isn't just as, oh, my last glory days. He does actually go on to play Quidditch, you know, as an adult.
Okay. But yeah, he's very passionate about it, so that's good.
Yeah, actually, was it? Oh, the Quidditch match is finally here. Or wait, well, we got the night before. Steele got a firebolt. And then Wood's like, team bed. Yeah, so, yeah, it's just a bunch of things. Oh, I knew there was something important. So right before, like the night before, like wee hours of the morning, Harry sees something outside.
Yeah, it's the big black shaggy dog, right? They emerged, and just then it emerged, a giant shaggy black dog moving stealthily across the lawn, Crookshanks trotting at its side. Ooh, what's Crookshanks up to?
Yeah, so it seems Crookshanks has some knowledge of this dog. And again, it seems the way Harry is explaining it, it's like, if it's not, it can't be a death omen then, because it's not purely an apparition, because another sentient being can see it.
Right. I just was thinking of the image of them walking together after all this Crookshanks Scabbers drama, which gets a little bit resolved here in the next chapter. But interesting yeah. Little twist there.
Yeah, and Harry tries to wake up Ron to see if he can see the dog, but of course both the dog and Crookshanks has vanished by that point.
This is an interesting moment before we get into the good old Quidditch match.
Yes, and do I really care? I do not care at all at this point.
No, I think the commentary is between the announcer is kind of cute, but that's Lee Jordan, I guess, which is a very interesting name. I feel like that's a very, I don't know, just kind of a very plain name.
Yeah, for a Lee choice. Jordan, one of the few characters in the books that is noted as black.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
And well, the most exciting thing is, you know, Malfoy is a jerk and literally grabs onto Harry's firebolt to, like, slow him down, to stop him.
Malfoy's depravity knows no end. He continues to just be a bother. I guess even, like, getting slapped in the face was no deterrent for him to continue to mess with Harry, Ron, and Hermione. So, whatever.
Yeah, again, one of the very few Quidditch matches that aren't relevant to the plot. Like, I can tolerate all the others because there's something plot-wise that goes on, like with Dementors, with Rogue Bludgers, with, you know, Quirrell and the Stone. But yeah, here it's just, you know, trying to feel a little bit better against Slytherin after all of Draco and Snape's depravity. And honestly, it doesn't make up for it, in my opinion.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't make no, I agree with that. If that's what they were going for, then it's kind of like, you want a match. Good job. Peace out. I don't know. But this chapter ended with a kind of a, on an up note, I guess, you know, they won the match. Everybody's happy. Harry's being lifted into the air. And I think the cute thing, kind of tying it back into the darkness, I guess, is when they say at the end, when he mentions Harry felt he could have produced the world's best Patronus. So I guess there's that, you know, he's still kind of building his arsenal of happy memories to go against these dark creatures.
Like, I'm just curious, like, what are the opinions of super sports fanatics, whether they read this, the Quidditch stuff differently?
I wonder that as well. And I also kind of wonder, because this seems to be very similar to football over in England. I don't know. I for a non-sports fan, I'm just kind of like, cool, great. I also have not ever read a lot of sports literature, so I don't know.
And so we move on to chapter 16, Professor Trelawney's prediction. Harry's euphoria at finally winning the Quidditch Cup lasted over a week. Yep, so everyone's happy, but, you know, they quickly all get distracted because their exams are coming up. Harry and the Golden Trio have their normal exams. Fred and George have their OWLs, ordinary wizarding levels, and Percy, as a seventh year, is taking his NEWT, nastily exhausting wizarding test. Again, I love these acronyms. I'm not familiar enough with the British, like, secondary education or primary education to know, like, what the equivalents of these are in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, I'm not either. I just applied them to, SATs and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, SATs, ACTs, and then yeah. Hermione's schedule, 9 o'clock, arithmancy, 9 o'clock, transfiguration, 1 o'clock, charms, 1 o'clock, ancient runes.
Yeah, and Ron is continues to be perplexed by this up to this point.
Like, does Hermione ever study with herself?
I don't know. I just can't imagine that schedule and double booking. I mean, I just remember having a stacked schedule in college, like, to try to keep everything straight. And I feel like it was like, oh my God.
Because there are really only two ways. Either you're cloning yourself or you're dealing with time.
Yeah. And I think the thing that keeps, you know, especially given Hermione's stress level at this point, and, you know, trying to get all this stuff together, I feel like I want to hold McGonagall a little more responsible because she's the one who kind of made this happen for Hermione. It's fine to encourage somebody, but you're kind of encouraging the opposite.
There's been, like, speculation again of how, like, yeah, definitely I think McGonagall should be held accountable. Like, I'm sure Hermione didn't know about that time turners were a thing. I think she must have maybe signed up for all the classes, and it was McGonagall who would have had to say, well, there is a way to do this, but ... But again, still, she let Hermione do it.
Right. I feel like the more responsible thing would have been, you know, oh, it's great, you want to take all this stuff, but, like, you know, we'll pack your schedule, but not kind of give her an additional way to have a really stressful schedule. Because I think that's the other thing that is always happening to these kids. There's always something else going on, you know, around school. It's not just like they take their classes and then they, you know, have a nice fancy dinner and go to bed. It's like there's always chaos brewing, especially this year.
And especially for these particular three students.
Right, exactly.
So I love that. Have either of you seen my copy of Numerology and Grammatica? Oh yeah, I borrowed it for a bit of bedtime reading.
Hey Ron, that might help you fall asleep, so don't knock it.
And then they get a note from Hagrid. Buckbeak's got an appeal. It's set for the 6th of the month, but they're already bringing the executioner guy.
Oh, this. All of this just made me wonder what the hell was going on in this place. because they're bringing an executioner and the committee to a school where there are kids. What? Like, I don't know. This was a lot for me to kind of go, what the hell are these people thinking?
And then we get a little montage of, you know, all their exams.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and charms, care of magical creatures. Lupin's is the most interesting, where he sets up a sort of obstacle course for them to, like, get through.
Yeah, I would expect nothing less from Professor Lupin. He's an interesting guy and makes learning fun.
Yeah, and so you were curious about Hermione's bog art. We finally got it.
Yeah, let me find it again. Oh my gosh.
Hermione said, startled, "What's the matter?" Professor McGonagall, Hermione gasped, pointing in the trunk. She said I failed everything.
That is, I guess, that's an interesting thing to be afraid of, but that's okay.
Well, know? I think I remember me speculating, like, how would a bog art, you know, tangibly represent the abstract notion of failure? And I guess this is how.
I guess so. In the form of Professor McGonagall, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Because I think it's the sense of, you know, Neville's, like, scared of Snape, but it's the sense of someone who you know, you admire and respect saying you failed.
Right. Yeah, that is not something that, and especially that, again, like I think we talked about last time, was the relationship that McGonagall and Hermione have, and it seems to be pretty tight. So I'm sure that's even that much worse.
And then the bump into Cornelius Fudge.
Yeah.
Which I'm just like, of all people, like, he is the one who has to be the sort of witness for this Buckbeak deal. Like, he has nothing better to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand the idea of condensing characters and stuff, and, you know, he has, like, it's a reasonable, like, I'm already here on the business about Sirius Black, so I'm doing this as well, I'm just adding it to my plate, but, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I forgot to tell you when I was talking about how I felt after finishing the Hunger Games trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the same vein, I liked the character of President Snow. I just wish the, like, sort of antagonist that Katniss dealt with and was, you know, was the face of the government was not the president himself. Because I think just realistically, like, the president, like, wouldn't himself, like, dare to lower himself of, like, dealing with this problematic teenager, even if she's a legitimate threat to the regime. Like, I would have preferred the Snow character if he had been just one of the high-ranking, like, advisors to the president.
Yeah, I guess I never thought about it in that capacity.
But I'm coming from a very, like, Middle Eastern type of tyranny where, like, honor, which is not another fancy way for pride, is, you know, you don't dare show weakness in any way, shape, or form. And to me, like, having the president himself come and, you know, lay all the cards out to a teenager like Katniss, to me that just seems so weird. Like, yeah. But
yeah,
by extension, again, the fact that Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, like literally the Prime Minister President, is the one who is going to be the witness, I'm just like,
Yeah, I didn't really think about it in detail. He just kind of pops up in these random times, but it's just kind of like, I guess the top person's here, so whatever, let's just go with that. Yeah, it might have benefited to have another character. I have to throw in another character, goodness. We've got plenty of them, so.
And then we move on to Professor Trelawney's exam.
Yeah, so they're going up to her individually to take this exam, and
yeah, this like reminds me of all my like language exams where you have the oral part, you have to sit outside with all your classmates and she calls you in one by one to do your oral like conversation exam.
That makes sense. I guess that maybe would save somebody from a bit of the nerves, maybe a little bit. I don't know. I think it just depends on the person, because some people are really intimidated by like that situation. Other people would be more intimidated by...
Well, it's a trade-off. You're trading off the lack of audience with the fact that you have to wait in the hallway with everyone else.
Yeah.
Which in regards to this is specifically testing on crystal balls, like I know my French teacher, the way she taught one of her role-playing exercises was to teach students future tense is she would pull out a crystal ball and make you say, you will, blah, blah, blah.
I like that. That's a good way to help people remember things.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Harry gets called in and he is just like, what do you see in the swirls of mist? And Harry's like, I see a hippogriff. And she's like, ah, you're seeing the climax of Hagrid's plight. Does it still have its head? No blood? No gore? Like, she's desperate for, like,
yeah.
And I'm just like, chill, Trelawney.
I kind of thought, like, at this point, it was like, Trelawney, you're just like a drama queen. Like, maybe go be on Real Housewives or something. I don't know. This just seemed like she, you know, kind of to go back to McGonagall's comment toward the beginning of the book, where she was like, who's dying this year? Kind of like making fun of her kind of lust for the drama, I guess.
Well, and again, it makes you think of what came first, the chicken or the egg. Is she naturally this way, or is she naturally trying the flair for the melodrama and being a drama queen because she's trying to get whatever attention she can because her subject is given so little credence?
Yeah, I don't know. That's it. I feel like she's not doing herself any favors. Like, it's like the second time I've said that today. But with this, you know, I guess if she kind of presented herself a little more seriously, how would that have gone over in at Hogwarts? I don't know.
And so Harry finishes up his exam. He's about to leave, and again, Trelawney seems to go into something similar to a seizure.
Yeah, and this is where it gets very, like, she's been possessed almost.
It will happen tonight. The Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. His servant has been chained these 12 years. Tonight before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. The Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever he was. Tonight before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master.
So an ominous, you know, kind of cryptic message fell out of Trelawney's mouth, and then she kind of passes out forward and doesn't know what just happened.
Either she doesn't know what happened or is pretending not to know what happened.
Yeah. I just kind of got the vibe that she's like, you know, I just thought this was so interesting for her to actually have some weird situation, or at least that's definitely how Harry perceived it, and very dramatic, very intense compared to what's happened before. And she's just kind of like, what are you talking about? I'm fine. Get out here. You know, it was very strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trelawney and her relationship with her supposed or not so supposed gift, it will come up later.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm curious about Miss Professor, and it came out Mr. Professor Trelawney and her antics.
Yep. And of course, Buckbeak has lost his appeal.
Yeah, good on them for trying, but you kind of knew it wasn't going to go in the direction we wanted it to go because of who the players are, and the main player being.
Yeah, like, is there an HR department at the Ministry of Magic?
There needs to be one. There needs to be some checks and balances.
I feel like in every, like, horror story I've read on the internet, people go to HR and HR never does anything.
HR is from my experience with HR. HR is there for the organization, not for the individual. But that's just from what I've seen.
Yeah, and at my place, it's even worse because the financial people and the HR people, who are supposed to kind of be on polar opposites, like, they're the same in my school, and it makes no sense, and it's dumb.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I feel like we need to have a little bit more division of those things in the world, but there needs to be some oversight in this whole situation. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So they're like, we have to go down and see him, but Harry doesn't have his invisibility cloak. He's been too scared to go get it because he left it, like, in the sort of tunnel entranceway right under the witch's statue. And Hermione is being a little bit ballsy and goes and gets it herself.
Yeah, they're kind of like seeing a whole new side of Hermione. She's slapping Malfoy. She's dropping classes. She's sneaking out. So I feel like she has this moment in whatever book. She has this kind of little moment of where she's pushing herself to do something that's not kind of what's on autopilot for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw a little bit of that in Chamber of Secrets, where she was like, it was her idea and she was the one pushing to like create the illicit Polyjuice potion.
Right. Yeah. She has these moments of, so I mean, I guess, especially being 13, she's probably, you know, just trying to figure herself out, I guess, a little bit. So,
yeah. So Hermione gets the invisibility cloak, and so they go down to visit Hagrid. And of course, they're all really sad, and it's like, is there nothing we can do? And he's like, no, it, you know, Dumbledore can't overrule it, you know, nothing can be done. And everyone's crying and upset and trying not to sob, and it's all very depressing. But of everything, who turns up?
Just like we knew he would, Scabbers is now... Why he's hanging out there, I'm not sure, but there he is, hanging out with Hagrid.
Yep, and again, basically a skeleton, patches of fur missing, and is a complete nervous wreck.
Yes, so I'm wondering if this has something to do with the Grim and Crookshanks and, you know, all the, it's like a little mini, like a little animal drama going on in the, in within the novel. So, but I'm glad he's back. I think her, you know, Ron kind of finally like accepted the fact that that is what happened. And then here comes Scabbers showing up and, I don't know, it's gotta be weird.
Mm-hmm. And then right after that discovery, they see Dumbledore and the other officials coming down to the hut, and so they have to leave Hagrid.
Yeah. Again, this is all just very... I don't know why this is happening at a school, but okay. Yeah, but good on, you know, Hagrid's grateful that Dumbledore is coming down to be there with him. So Hagrid's got good support. Lucky guy.
Yep. And the... chapter ends with, there was a jumble of indistinct male voices, a silence, and then without warning, the unmistakable swish and thud of an axe.
Yeah. I think, like you said earlier in our discussions, produce the body, so I'm not sure yet. It sounds pretty convincing that Buckbeak is no longer with us, but I'm not sure yet.
And thus concludes chapter 16.
Those were short chapters, comparatively, I think.
Comparatively, in the grand scheme of things. Well, and then also combined with the fact they were shorter, and then again, just a Quidditch chapter that didn't even propel the plot too much. It was just like a little bit of a ray of hope before the depressing stuff.
Right, yeah. So, I can't do a lot of Quidditch analysis. Sorry, everybody. It's not a lot to me, but interesting. It was, things happened. They always do.
Shall we move on to Gothic Geek Out?
Let's do it. Gothic Geek Out.
Alrighty. So, what did you think of?
So this time I think I tried to go a little unconventional, and I was thinking about the communications regarding Buckbeak's fate, and kind of just the letter writing as a form of communication. And it made me think of Dracula. It just made me think of all those old Gothic stories and how that is usually kind of a pivotal part. I'm not talking about communication as far as like, you know, general communication, but letter writing and kind of the formality of what transpires with the whole Buckbeak Malfoy incident. That was what I found to be Gothic beyond the just execution trial itself, which I don't know if is necessarily Gothic. I, of course, am going to apply some of that to the Hunchback of Notre Dame and some of the things that transpire at the end with Quasimodo. But you know, mm-hmm. that's what I'm going with. How about you? What were your Gothic elements?
My biggest Gothic element I think of is Professor Trelawney's prediction.
Yeah.
The idea of her like freezing up and like going into this like sort of trance and not supposedly not remembering anything afterwards.
Oh, go ahead.
Again, in our Gothometer, like prophecy is definitely a big tenet of fantasy literature more so than Gothic literature. But I think the idea of within our Gothometer, we would constantly discuss how much of an element is the past. And, you know, prophecy can come up in Gothic literature. A lot of times prophecy kind of comes up in its sort of like sub form of like curse, a family curse, like something that you will be forever, like your descendants will be haunted by this curse, blah, blah, blah. But like not just the notion of prophecy and prediction, but also again, just the nature of how Professor Trelawney delivers this prophecy. It kind of reminds me of, you know, sort of how a lot of, you know, Gothic or modern horror will depict someone being possessed by a ghost or a demon to convey a certain message, whether benevolent or malevolent.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. That's kind of what I'm thinking of as well, as instances of possession or a message being channeled through somebody.
I'm specifically thinking about this in regards to The Quickening, that by Rhiannon Ward, who I did interview on Sublimely Gothic about her book, The Quickening.
Yeah.
And yeah, because a big character, the character who ends up murdered, is the medium. And there was this big question of, was she a fraud or was she real? And whether, you know, her messages from the supposed dead were legitimate.
Interesting. That, you know what? I just saw another book that had a similar, like something with a medium. And it wasn't that. But interesting. I'm very curious to find out more about Trelawney and her antics, because I do not have her figured out yet.
Yeah, and Rhiannon Ward, she actually has another book coming out in October, The Shadowing. So I'm very excited to read that one, although it's going to take forever for the physical copy to finally be available in the United States.
Yeah, she's a UK author, right?
So, yeah, she's British.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to listen to your interview yet, but I need to go do that.
Yeah, about the first half. You haven't read the book, have you?
No, not yet. No.
Yeah, so like you can only like read the first or listen to the first 30 minutes, but after that, it's post spoilers.
Okay, cool.
Okay, and now we can move on to Tarot of the Day. So, interesting card. Like, we just discussed Six of Cups for the last chapters, and I pulled actually the Eight of Cups for this episode.
Wow. Emotions, cups. That's what I always think of.
Cups. Honestly, I forget from the imagery of when I pulled out the card, it wasn't the happiest, I don't think. So, upright. Keywords are disappointment, abandonment, withdrawal, escapism. Okay.
Ooh, okay.
So, when the Eight of Cups shows in a tarot reading, you may feel compelled to walk away from a disappointing situation. It could mean turning your back on an unfulfilling relationship, job, career path, living arrangement, or creative project that was once a source of great happiness, but now only brings you pain. You have invested yourself emotionally, but despite your best efforts and disappointments, it hasn't turned out the way you have expected to, and you realize that you are no longer getting anything out of this situation. Now the only choice is to put it behind you and move on with your life, even if it brings you sadness as you say goodbye.
The thing that comes to mind would be, we are led to believe that Buckbeak's passing in this chapter, at the end of this chapter, for Hagrid. That's kind of what came to me immediately.
Yeah, and definitely mostly for Hagrid, but also I think especially in this chapter for Ron, because Ron was the one who was taking on the bulk of the Hippogriff research, and he was the one that was most indignant. Like, I, you know, did all this research, I created all these like counterpoints, like they can't possibly just ignore all of it. So I think, you know, it's Ron coming to the realization that just putting in a certain level of work doesn't automatically yield results.
Yeah, and that's kind of a bummer to find out. And kind of like what you had mentioned earlier, he doesn't really often put that level of effort into things, it seems, but he has the capability. So this isn't probably helping his like thought, like, if I work really hard, sometimes it just doesn't work like that. Sorry, Ron.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of my own feelings in regards to creative entrepreneurship.
Okay.
Because, again, I'm just really get in the mindset of, like, you know, I put in so much work and I expect a certain level of result, which I can be assured of that in a normal, you know, 9-to-5 job. But in terms of, you know, branching out, whether it's my, you know, podcasting or my poetry collections that I self-publish, like, you know, that doesn't automatically guarantee an exact ratio of effort equates profit or success or whatever.
Yeah, I am pretty disenchanted with some things that I've put a lot of effort into. So, I think it's kind of a bummer to find that out when you work really hard on something or with something or for somebody, and then it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't work out like you kind of hoped it would. So
have you ever felt those sort of things in regards to, like, your stuff as an artist?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I had one painting in particular that I did. I worked really hard. I mapped it out and I did all kinds of things. And that was something where somebody tried to scam me, which was quite a bummer, but absolutely. You put so much investment and you work really hard to do these things. And then it's just kind of like, you know, I think eventually I had to get to a point where I'm like, well, I'm doing this for me. So that's kind of all. But
Yeah. Cause it got me thinking of, one of my favorite contemporary painters, her name is Iris Scott. Have you heard of her?
I have not.
Mm-mm. Her paintings are absolutely gorgeous. And the best thing about them is she doesn't paint with brushes. She paints with her fingers.
Oh, cool. Oh, very nice.
But looking in her, you know, her website and her bio, it took her 10 years of, like, you know, working full time as an artist, you know, to finally get where she is, you know, to even get to a point of being, like, you know, a successful, what would you consider a successful, lucrative, you know, business.
Well, that's, yeah, I feel like you hear that from especially a lot of creative people, and then they get that success and they're like, keep going. So it's really hard when you're, you know, I guess to think about, I just saw an author's video where she kind of had the same, you know, story. She was kind of disenchanted and it took 10 years and now her books are doing very well. I couldn't tell you the title of the books, but I just thought, well, that's good to keep that in mind.
So. Yeah. Well, I feel like the theme song of the Eight of Cups is like, should I stay or should I go?
It's a great song. So yes, I like that as well.
Alrighty then. And now we move on to we just finished tarot. Now we move on to rune of the day. And yes. This rune is Dagaz.
What does it look like?
It is, it's sort of like two triangles kissing each other.
Okay, that's a good description.
It corresponds with the sound D.
Okay.
And keywords are daylight, success, hope, breakthrough, transformation, and balance. Again, opposite to what our tarot connotation was.
Yeah. That's the same thing that happened in our last episode. That's really funny.
Yeah, so this is the rune of daylight and is considered a very beneficial sign in any reading. For the ancient Norse, daylight was a precious commodity during the long cold winters. You know, yeah, Denmark and Finland and all of those places. Increased growth, prosperity, strength, good health, and general well-being are indicated by this rune. You may experience an unexpected successful outcome concerning a problem or project you have been working on. You are encouraged to remain optimistic and to keep your focus on the light as positive new developments unfold.
I guess I'm going to apply this to the Quidditch match because I feel like that's the best application that I can make, because the rest of the chapter really isn't that. It's like Hermione's stressed out, Buckbeak's going to lose his life, Hagrid's bummed out, Harry's, you know, had this weird encounter with Trelawney. So the most positive thing I can think of is them winning the Quidditch Cup.
Yeah, like the Quidditch Cup, and then only, like, again, in certain individuals, like Harry, like in regards to their exams. Because defense against the Dark Arts went well for Harry, but not so well for Hermione. And potions went terrible for Harry, where, like, his potion wasn't thickening. And I'm like, Harry, that is my life for like any soup I try to make. I cannot thicken my soups to save my goddamn life, and usually my husband has to step in and do it.
That's pretty funny. I mean, just most situations like that. Thankfully, my soups usually turn around all right. So
yeah, like there's funny. Some notes in here about representing the breakthrough of insight and inspiration, whether on an artistic, creative, or in terms of spiritual enlightenment, communication with divine energies. Again, the only thing that's really applicable is specifically Professor Trelawney's predictions, although that is most definitely not in a positive light.
No, I guess just like kind of providing validation, maybe, to what she's been talking about. But yeah, beyond that, it is not a very happy situation by any means.
Anything else? That's all I can come up with.
And that's kind of, I mean, that's just like a real happy thing, Rune, for a not really uplifting couple of chapters. I guess, you know, again, the end of the Quidditch match chapter was very uplifting for Gryffindor, but the rest of it, no.
And now we move on to fan fiction time.
Cool. Would you like me to go first?
Yes, please.
Because of the kind of what transpired with the Buckbeak trial, all of that, I kind of wondered what would happen if it backfired on the Malfoys. Like if Lucius didn't have the sway and, you know, influence that he obviously does, and it's instead it just ruined their reputation. You know, I know Hagrid isn't respected, but I think Dumbledore is. And I mean, we know Dumbledore is, but so I just kind of wondered how that would have, you know, like Buckbeak was fine. Everybody knew this guy's kid was a brat and a jerk, and they kind of trusted Dumbledore's decision-making to keep Hagrid there. That was just a thing that I thought would be interesting to think about.
Well, what I think about while you were walking through that is, I would like it is, again, they got the Fudge and the other committee members there. It would have been nice if, you know, there was some sort of circumstance where Buckbeak could have done something heroic, like save a kid from, I don't know, the giant squid, even though the giant squid I always advocate is a kindly cephalopod and would never do such a thing in the first place. But if it was in a position where Buckbeak were to behave in a way that I've seen like horses behave in regards to their owners, to show that could make it very blatantly obvious that he is not a savage creature. And then, yeah, choosing to go forward with the appeal process.
Yeah, that would have been a good good thing to. I just kind of like the idea of it not working out, like, you know, the Malfoys not getting their way in this situation, because it just is such a crummy situation and it's so dark, and that to me would be really fun. But what was your fan fiction? That's the best I could do there. I couldn't do much with Quidditch. Like, what if the Gryffindors lost the match? I mean, whatever.
Honestly, I would have liked, what if Harry or Ron legitimately did see something in their crystal balls? And what if they legitimately could do divination? I think that was one of your fanfic speculations a while back. Like, what if Hermione actually, you know, gave this a chance and actually could have the gift? But what if Harry or Ron could have the gift and started to see things?
You know, that's funny. And I was thinking about that when reading it and thinking about Harry writing it. And I just kind of was like, you just kind of hate divination. So like, you're not going to ever portray it well. So that would be very interesting if it was something that, I mean, if Harry was good at that too, it would be like, oh my gosh, you know, he's just out of control with power. But I think I like that, thought that maybe Ron would be really good at it. And I'm sure for a while that would really, you know, Hermione always disregards it, but maybe that would help her kind of go, maybe there is something to that.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, in a variety of ways, I wish Ron had distinguished himself, again, whether it's divination or, again, bonding with Noberts. I always want Ron to, like, have some certain talent or gift so that he won't feel so insecure and he, like, can feel balanced and feel, like, feel feels like he can contribute to this golden trio, because we've got the boy who lived and the girl who's a genius, and then there's me doing my, you know, doing my, you know, prediction thing or whatever.
Right. Yeah, that would be a pretty cool way to just fill that out, as especially in this world, to have that extra element to the trio. That'd be cool. Yeah,
because I remember, you know, my first legit crystal ball gazing session, the first thing I saw was a paw print in the snow.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. So,
again, I don't need to go into the whole, like, deep metaphysical, like, do you see something or is it me just, you know, because I think, you know, I tend to do a more physiological, because, like, when you stare into, whether you stare into a black mirror or a crystal ball or, like, incense or, like, whenever, it's called scrying. So whenever you do scrying, it's literally to a point you're staring at something to the point that your eyes become unfocused, and then literal, like, images and blots will start to appear in your line of vision.
Okay.
And so it's like, again, it is a, you know, physiological response, and it's the idea of what shapes can you, you know, distinguish from this physiological response that you get from concentrating so hard on one specific inanimate object.
Yeah. I've heard, like, people do candle gazing or whatever.
Yeah, fire scrying, that's definitely one as well. Yeah, water, you know, lots of things.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know. You know, that's like my kind of perception or my attitude toward all of this is, I don't know. I don't know. And especially in this world, it's just interesting to have it just be as, it's interesting to have it not be something that's just easily accepted and something that's just as controversial as it is in the Muggle world.
But yeah, but that's all I've got. And thus concludes this episode of The Rambling Raven Pups. Tune in next time where we shall be going over chapters 17 and 18. Cat, Rat, and Dog, which alludes to your whole animal drama you were talking about.
Yes.
And chapter 18, Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Again, these last, how many is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Last 6 chapters. Lots of plot unfolding.
Okay. All right. I will be ready.
Yeah, this is, I'm not saying it as this as a criticism, like in a bad way, but this is a significantly larger info dump than we're typically used to in the climax of like the previous 2 books.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right. Well, we're leveling up here at this point, I guess.
Alrighty then, catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.